Miller Lite, the official beer partner of your Philadelphia Phillies, is proud to serve as presenting sponsor of WIP's High Hopes Pod. So whether you're listening to the game, catching up on the latest High Hopes Pod, or at the ballpark, remember, it tastes like Miller time, Phillies fans. Celebrate responsibly.
Hey, gang, it's Jill Schlesinger. I'm launching a new show. It's called Money Moves, and we are going to move. We are going to answer your financial questions and take the mystery out of your financial life. Follow and listen wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the High Hopes Podcast.
High Hopes.
On the Odyssey app and Sports Radio 94 WIP.
The crowd was singing high.
Never a doubt. Never a doubt. Welcome on in. It is the High Hopes Podcast, presented as always by Miller Lite. And if you've been listening this week, obviously you know there is no final out tonight, which means that everyone gets to go to bed at least 20 minutes earlier. And it also means that Tucker Bagley has joined me for every single one of these post-game podcasts. And tonight, Tucker, my goodness, we're back on the roulette wheel of what they need to trade for at the trade deadline. And tonight, it's time to trade for an offensive piece. Tucker Bagley, welcome on in. And how you doing, pal?
Yeah, I mean, 24 hours after panicking about the bullpen and the back end of the starting pitching, Jesus Luzardo throws a gem. Jonathan Bolin, clean eighth inning. Jaron Duran, after, you know, maybe struggling the first couple of batters, finds the zone, ends it. And we're back to worrying about a right-handed hitter again, just like that.
Never a doubt. Never a doubt. Yeah, it was funny. Every Duran ninth now, you've seen Billy Madison. I feel like you went through a big Billy Madison phase. In your,
like, big Adam Sandler phase, yeah, in like middle school.
Everyone did. Everyone that is, I would say, 35 and under appreciate 90s Adam Sandler and the run that he went on. But every single time I watch Jawan Duran now, and tonight, a good example of that. You know, tonight he allows the first two runners. You're kind of thinking, I don't like this at all. And then he just settles in, strikes out two guys, and then an easy last out. I just think about the scene in Billy Madison where Steve Buscemi is standing there crossing off a name on the list, and Adam Sandler's like, I'm glad I called that guy. That's why I feel like every Duran ninth is like Dave Dombrowski looking at the Mick Abel and Eduardo Tait trade and saying, man, am I glad I called that guy. Because it is after the years and years of Knebel and these rant Kimbrel. Now, Kimbrel made the All-Star team in 23. Not to slight first half Kimbrel of 23, but going from the slop that we have had closing out games, and not to disrespect 2017 Jenmar Gomez, to this guy, it is just such a lifesaver at the end of games, man. It is a joy to have Jawan Duran on this team.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, like it's been a very, very long time. I know people don't like him, but really since Jonathan Papelbon, you haven't had a closer where when you're going into the ninth inning, you feel truly confident. And they've had guys who've had moments, right? Like Jeff Hoffman had a moment, you mentioned first half, Craig Kimbrel, like, they've had hot relievers, but I mean, he's the first true shutdown closer you've had in 12 years, 13 years. I mean, it's really impressive, not only the way he gets outs and he's efficient, but when you have nights like tonight where, man, it really doesn't look like he has it, and compare it to someone like Jose Alvarado a night ago who dealt with a similar situation, him giving up four runs after walking three batters. I mean, he walks two. Or gives up, I guess, that fluky single on the 10th pitch at bat, walks a batter. They have a mound visit, and then he settles down, gets a couple strikeouts, weak ground ball to third, ball game.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it feels like JT went out there, and he just said, hey, maybe just strike out the next two guys. and Duran's like, no problem. I got it.
I can do that.
I'm going to put you on the spot here. The nice part about this is that I think they'll eventually just take care of both guys. But let's say you had to only extend one. They both have a year and a half left. Is it Duran or Marsh?
I think it's Marsh.
I think it's March 2. I think they're going to take care of both. It's not a big fear of mine that they would let Duran go, especially, you know, after some of the ninth inning experiences we've had here. I think that they will take care of Duran and make sure that he's paid handsomely and, you know, paid like one of the top five closers in the sport, which he is. It is nice, obviously, having the everyday position player that Brandon Marsh has been. It was good to see Marshy get a couple hits tonight. It's not the lead story, but Brandon Marsh, all of a sudden, I looked up and his average was at 304.
I think he's 2 for 21 heading into tonight.
Well, I mean, between him, Harp is now like 0 for his last 19. It's like he made the All-Star game and then was just like, first half over. And we'll get into it, I'm sure, a little bit later. But he is in the home run derby. Never a doubt there.
Knocker there.
Never a doubt that the showman's going to be in the home run derby at CBP. So, yeah. But the Duran eventual payday, I think March will be paid. I wonder, I'm very curious what an eventual March deal looks like. Because the first number that jumps out is 500. He's 28. He'll be 29 at the time of his free agency. 5-100 would give you $20 million a year over 5 years. Sounds about fair for him. Juan Duran, probably between 17 and $20 million over 4 years. Like both those guys are probably going to get paid. Both those guys cannot leave. Brandon Marsh is very important to the future of this team, given that they don't have like an abundance of outfielders coming through the system that are ready to or are knocking on the doorstep to take down that spot. And Juwan Duran, it's like, you know, Alex McFarland sitting at that at Reading throwing 102. Well, don't need to bring him up, so we might as well just pay Duran whatever it takes. But overall, wasn't the prettiest series win, Tucker. But it was a series win, and like you mentioned, and we'll obviously get into it. But, man, Jesus Luzardo is pretty dang good, my friend.
Definitely deserving of that All-Star nod. Like, Zach Wheeler, you felt like pitched the other night. Like, he was angry that he was snubbed that he was an All-Star. Jesus Luzardo pitched today like he wanted to prove to everybody why he was named an All-Star. I mean, that's what he does. When he's on, he's able to strike people out. He kept them off balance. He didn't really give up much hard contact, if at all. His ERA on the road now is 1.38, best in the National League.
That's the best in the NL.
Yeah, the kid on the Yankees, I think, is like 1.04. He's the only one lower than him.
Is that Schlittler?
Schlittler? Okay. I was afraid to say his name.
We're not like there's no FCC regulations here. But
I know.
Yeah. So. Oh, wow. I didn't realize he had the best in the National League.
He's 1.38. Mizorowski's 1.66. And those are the only two in the NL. And then Schittler's 1.04. Gilbert, 1.73. And Nick Martinez, 2.12.
A member of two of my fantasy teams. One of my favorites. Yeah. He was, you know, and he was also chippy, too, which I appreciate. I love when pitchers get a little
fired up. I couldn't
figure
out who he was yelling at or why he was yelling. Because it was a pretty routine inning, and then he turned to the dugout without any fireworks. And T-Mac on the broadcast is like, well, maybe he's mad at Ellie De La Cruz for running into Bryson Stott last night. But that seems a little ridiculous.
Well, it was two nights ago at that point, you know, so it was a little bit – it was even longer. I have no idea why he was mad. I really don't. I always assume in those situations that it's sign-stealing. That he feels like that they are trying to relay something to the hitters. And I tell you what, again, I was 2-0 in the high school playoffs. I was the 45th ranked player in the state of Pennsylvania in 2012. Many people still talk about it. But there is nothing.
Who was 44?
I don't know, actually. Are any of them doing a podcast in the Phillies tonight? Probably not. But there was nothing more frustrating than feeling like they had something on you, like science-wise, and you, like having the bleep you kind of mentality that already comes with pitching. I think pitching is the single most bleep you position in all of sports, because you have to believe that if you're going to get outs. And it's such just you feel like you turn into a different person on the mound. Like Luzardo is a very mild-mannered, calm guy, and then he's out there. And then all of a sudden, in the second inning, he's yelling at maybe Ellie De La Cruz for almost no reason besides maybe stealing signs. It was crazy. Either way, I appreciate the level of intensity that he felt, even though that's his last start before the All-Star break. And Like, he was in complete and total control of that game, especially last night. You see, maybe they got different baseballs in today. Who knows? It's Major League Baseball. They change it by the day. But, you know, last night it felt like the ball was flying out of there. We know that ballpark is a notorious hitter's park. The ball wasn't traveling as well tonight, it seemed, as, like, Stott got robbed at the wall. But he was in complete control, dominance. You know, I we've been monitoring that. Like, he'll dial it down to 93, 94, and then, you know, rack it back up into 97, 98 when he wants to chase a strikeout. But to be more efficient, he is lowering that velocity to get more into the strike zone. I think the changeup's been a total equalizer. Sweeper is one of the best pitchers in baseball this year. I'm not going to lie. I had it written in my notes, had he gotten pulled after, like, the fifth. I thought he looked a little tight. Like, I thought his back looked tightened up a little bit. But thankfully, he got through it and ended up just completely and totally shoving. But, you know, after a first half, because now he's not going to pitch for the All-Star game, and hopefully he pitches in the All-Star game, that'd be fun. His ERA is 3.51, and I know you just mentioned what he's on the road, which is great. 3.51, after the contract that he got, after it feels like there's some people saying, like, can we really trust Lizardo? When it's all said and done, even with the blow-up starts, that is a damn good first half. I know Zach Wheeler is pitching to a low two. I know Chris Sanchez should be pitching to a low two, but we have a shortstop who should be a center fielder. What Lizardo has done should not be overlooked. They have a legitimate big three at the top of the rotation, and it's good to see the ERA start to reflect how good this guy's been, really, since May 1, Tucker. I mean, May 1, he's been Jesus Lizardo.
Yeah, and I think, you know, after watching last night and kind of how the way the team flounders when one of those three guys isn't on the mound, it just adds more pressure to him to go out and pitch like this, and for him to answer the bell and go out and throw seven shutout innings like that, I think is huge for the team, because they're really relying on those three guys to carry their weight in the rotation and, you know, put up starts like he did tonight and like Wheeler did in the series opener, because you kind of know that when Nola is starting or when whoever's filling the fifth role is starting, chances are it might not be a very competitive game based on what we've seen the last 2 months. But what's crazy with Jesus Lizardo, you mentioned kind of the blow-up starts. You know, he doesn't have a start this year where he's allowed three or four runs.
Lizardo?
He's allowed, I think, five or more in four starts, and he's allowed two or less in every other one.
Okay, yeah, no, I was confused for a second. But that, I mean, that checks out. It's either
dominant or he gets blown up.
yeah. But I mean, I'm trying to think, because off the top of my head, since, again, May, it's been really just what? The Rockies start at CBP.
The Rockies start, he gave up five.
And the White Sox start.
And he gave up five against the White Sox. Other than that, it's been 2-0, 2-0, 2-1, 2-1, 1-0.
Yeah. It feels like people are maybe using their eyes when it comes to him. And why he is on.
He's the ultimate eye test pitcher, I think. Because you'll watch games where he gets blown up, and it's like, man, I really didn't think he was that bad. Like, especially that White Sox start. It was like, yeah, I thought he pitched pretty well for a guy who gave up five runs.
But if you put it on Twitter, it's like, there you go. There he is. Just giving them a pass per usual. That's what you do. Every day, just giving them a pass. But yeah, no, I agree with you. Lizardo is the best. When he's pitching bad, he's the best bad pitcher I've ever seen in my life. He can still generate swing and miss and all that good stuff. So, and if you look at his baseball savant, everything under the hood suggests that it's all going well. So, good to see him shove tonight.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing
and Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around waiting for the track to dry is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply. It's always amazing to see how quickly your child grows, and I'm not just talking about their height. From those early babbles to full-on storytelling, getting to watch how their ideas, creativity, and confidence develop over the years is honestly pretty incredible. Sometimes they surprise you with what they come up with, and Lego Bricks can be right there with them through all of those stages. It's not just a toy, it's a full creative building journey that keeps evolving as they do. Lego Sets Play starts as early as 1.5 with Lego Duplo, the bigger bricks designed for little hands that are just starting to explore and build. Then around age 4, kids transition to the smaller Lego bricks, and suddenly, you're watching real structures take shape, real ideas form, and their imagination really take off. They begin with simple stacking, but over time they grow into full-on creators, building worlds, stories, and things you never would have expected. That's the kind of magic of Lego Bricks. You're not buying a phase, you're starting a journey. Learn more and start building today with Lego Bricks.
Now, Tucker, I'm going to be honest, I did not love getting dominated by Brady Singer just over and over. I mean, he pitches how I think a lot of people want to see Aaron Nola pitch, where it's just that fastball down and away over and over and over again. I was watching Brady Singer tonight, and all I could think about was Dave Dombrowski watching this and saying, "That's our guy. He's not gonna.
He loves blue chip talent.
He's not gonna cost a ton. Former first rounder, knows how to pitch. He could be a swing guy. You know, he could, you know, start a game or come out of relief." Brady Singer has been in his career pretty eh. His ERA even heading to this game tonight was like 5.08. But at least for one night, and at least for heading into a possible deadline where you don't want to maybe trade all of your assets, having a guy in a walk year that can at least take the ball and maybe do a job, I don't know. I was kind of watching tonight thinking more about August 3rd than I was July 9th as this offense just really bad. Like, you can run the numbers if you can do it in the middle of the podcast. Would love to know what they are in getaway days. I mean, getaway days,
it can't be good.
They seem
that's why
to
it's
be.
It almost feels like they every series opener is a must win because you know they're not winning the third one.
I know. Well, I mean, even the last 2 years, Tucker, I feel like on the podcast we talked about it all the time. They will dominate the first two games, and you're like, all right, here's a sweep, and then nothing. That's why they can't win 10 straight. I mean, they are not allowed to win more than 7 straight games because God forbid that they could just sweep a series. Won't happen.
Do you think it's because they're an older team? They can't just keep that kind of stamina up?
So I
just feel there are days where it's like, it's too hot. They're not really going to have competitive at-bats today. Feels like a 3-0 loss.
Dude, I think that's true. I think that they are such a veteran-laden team that they all get together before the game and they say, hey, we're all a little tired, right? We don't need to go out there and, you know, grind one out. But thankfully, tonight, Justin Crawford got one big hit. Do you know he has 8 go-ahead RBIs this year? Like, late
in game.
That's
interesting. Like, he's come up in big clutch situations. And like, he has cut down on his strikeouts quite a bit. But I think the one thing this team has been missing is a high contact, low strikeout guy, a la Gene Segura, right? Like, he showed up a lot in big moments in the 2022 postseason just because he had bat-to-ball skills and put the ball in play when there are runners on base. And I think Justin Crawford kind of profiles that way, where if he's in a situation like he was tonight with a guy on second, you know, like, he might roll over on one, but he's at least going to make the defense make a play. And he hit it hard enough to get it through to right field and score the only run.
Yeah. And you look and all of a sudden his average is up to .263. Now, I know that's not playing every single day. It's not playing against lefties a majority of the time. But if I told you when he was hitting .238 or .241 that within a month he's going to be up to .263 and rising and could end the year, just like we said, I think a lot of podcasts out in the season, you take .270, you take .280, and you run with it, all of a sudden he is bearing down on that. So, you know, he made the swing adjustment after the Brewers game, after the Mizorowski start, which feels like, you know, one of those games, Tucker, where I don't know if you need to make drastic changes when you're facing Jacob Mizorowski. You know, maybe you could just say, hey, let's chalk that one up to the pitcher knowing what he's doing. But I appreciate Crawford wanting to get back in the lab and figuring it out. But since making the swing adjustment and dropping his hands a little bit lower, going to that nose stride, you're seeing a little bit harder contact the other way, which is great. Like, if he wants to use the entire field and he wants to slap a ball down the third baseline and get a double out of it, or hopefully hit a ball off the wall, or maybe even out of the ballpark to left field, I think that's who he can be. Like, I don't think he's Ben Revere. Ben Revere was a little slap hitter with no raw pop. I think Justin Crawford has raw pop. I think that he just has to tap into it, and maybe by lowering his hands, it allows him to get underneath the baseball more, drive it a little bit more. We've talked on the pod about giving him credit for, we've seen these kids come up, whether it's Kemp, Reyes, Rincon has had a good little stretch here. Not a great night tonight, but overall has had a good stretch. We've seen these kids come up and look overwhelmed. Crawford has never looked overwhelmed, even when he was struggling. And they tasked him with playing center field every night, even though he had not done that in the minor leagues, and facing major league pitching for the first time in his career. And on July 9th, heading into the All-Star break, I think you could say that Justin Crawford has had a successful first half of a season in his first time through the major leagues.
Yeah, I mean, since that Mizorowski start, he's hitting over 360, which obviously isn't sustainable, but I mean, that's what, 4 weeks now? It's July 9th now, so he's been an incredibly productive hitter, and, you know, I don't know kind of where you want the next step for him to be, whether that's unlocking more power at the plate, because I don't think he's Ben Revere, but he's certainly not a 20 home run guy, but can he be a 10 home run guy? And if you are, and if he's going to play center field, like I think for me, the biggest jump he can make in his game is probably defensively, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, like, you can't be I don't want him to be a 2 home run guy with the defense that he plays out there. I think defensively you want to see that going. I mean, the next step for him is doing it for more than a month, you know, like for him to be a high level quality major league starter. Again, I'm fine if he bats 7 through 9 for a good part of his career. If he gets super hot and is putting together one of those all-star years and you want to bat him lead off once, I mean, Trey does have 7 years left, so, you know, that might not happen.
By the time he's 30, maybe he can hit leadoff.
That might not happen. But I think just being that, like, you mentioned Segura, and I think we actually talked about that early in the year, about having that pest at the bottom of the lineup that can just turn it over and be a tough out and, you know, can almost be a bad ball hitter. There's nothing more demoralizing to a pitcher than a bad ball hitter that can just go down and flip a ball that's off the ground into left field. Not that I want Crawford to expand the zone anymore. But yeah, I mean, defensively, I think that he has been, it's not like he's a gold glover out there, but I think there was much more lapses in May and June than we've seen in the last month. I think
he's been less noticeable out there in a good way. Like, you kind of forget he's out there because he's not making the same mistakes. And I think offensively, him at the bottom of the lineup, you mentioned, you know, he's had a lot of go-ahead RBIs. He's had a lot of situations where he gets on base early in an inning and the top of the lineup kind of moves him around and he kickstarts a rally from that position. He's been really good at that too.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think he's a winning baseball player. You know, I think that's one of the things that they would say about Justin Crawford in the organization is that every level he's been at, he is a winner. And given the amount of clutches he's had this year, not to bring it back to Segura all the time, but I mean, Segura is the walk-off king in like 21 and 22. They kept walking the hitters to get to him.
And then Castellanos became the walk-off king. So.
He did. It was perfect. So, you know, so Lizardo shoves, Duran's great, Crawford, big hit, much needed. Some of the stars struggling. You know, Schwarber hit the home run last night, but overall has quieted down. He does rake out in Cincinnati, but hasn't been great. Trey back in the lineup tonight, like we said last night, Harper, of course, back to three. Harper 0 for his last 19, I believe. He got one hit the first at bat of the road trip, and he has gone quiet since. I wonder if the heavy bat is starting to wear on him a little bit, just having to swing that thing over and over again.
There was a note in the broadcast today. They asked him, would you use the heavy bat for the home run derby? And he said, no chance, I would get too tired.
Well, maybe that's something that we can... It's, again, not an excuse, sometimes an explanation. So that's what we do in this spot. But Marsh, good to see him again. Get two hits tonight. He had been going through it a little bit. They gave him an off day yesterday or 2 days ago against the lefty, Andrew Abbott. And, you know, maybe that kind of reset him a little bit and got him going. The last, you know, big kind of game thing that I want to talk about, and I know Kirkering has thrown a lot of pitches the last couple of games. Pretty noticeable that Jonathan Bolin was getting a 1-0 spot in the eighth, especially because Keller's now back from the IL. Maybe they don't want to do him in back-to-back spots because he pitched last night in the big 11-4 spot in the
high leverage situation.
High leverage.
Murray probably still pumping from that one.
High leverage Brad, as we're calling him on this pod. But I think they have been hesitant to give him high leverage spots, and maybe that strikeout the other night in the first game of the series gave them some confidence with Bolin, and maybe Bolin now can kind of take it and run with it. But a noticeable 1-0 eighth inning spot for Jonathan Bolin, and he passed it with flying colors, Tucker.
Yeah, only 12 pitches, went 1-2-3. I mean, it was as routine an eighth inning as you could have in a one-run game, and it just the contrast between that and what we saw yesterday with Tanner Banks and Jose Alvarado. Tanner Banks, who's got option today, so you no longer have two pitchers on the team carrying ERAs north of 7. But yeah, it felt like really a tryout for Bolin to be in a high leverage situation. My brother even texted me when he came in and said, "Well, why is he pitching? Why isn't Kirkering pitching?" And, you know, I think that was probably a common sentiment, but this is a guy who has pitched really well. His ERA is around 3.1, 3.2 right now. And he has the stuff to get people out. Like, they put him in a big situation earlier in the week with two on and two out, and he got a strikeout to get out of that jam and preserve a lead. And this kind of felt like the next step towards him being maybe one of those guys that you trust in high leverage situations, you know, in the playoffs.
Maybe he is just an adrenaline junkie, Jonathan Bolin. The higher the spot, the higher leverage the spot, the more likely.
You know, like when they say like closers can't pitch with a 4-run lead because they don't have their heart rate going the same amount. Same thing with Jonathan Bolin.
Yeah, yeah, that's what everyone says. People are walking down the streets of Philadelphia saying, "Hey, we just got to get Bolin in a high leverage spot, and everything will be okay." So, Phils do take 2 of 3, even with an absolute stinker in the middle. Tonight was mostly a stinker. But, you know, thankfully Justin Crawford got one big hit and was able to give them the lead. But overall, I wouldn't
say
had
five hits or five at bats with the runners in scoring position.
Yeah, it was not the most encouraging. Not the most encouraging series win, that's for sure. I did mention Brady Singer, and we have talked about Dave Dombrowski seemingly loving the package deals with organizations, even though he'll make two separate trades with the same team, sometimes same team, sometimes separate. Well, who could forget the Moniak for Noah Syndergaard at the deadline, or at the like legitimate deadline in 2022, after already making the Ohapi for Marsh trade. You know, last year you had the Bader trade on top of the Duran trade. So he seemingly does love linking up with the same team to try to bring home all their pieces. Of course, as we mentioned last night, the Red Sox have every single need that we could possibly have right there in front of us. The Reds, while not as perfect as the Red Sox, Brady Singer, who pitched tonight, could be an option. And then Spencer Steer, who had two hits last night, did not do anything tonight against lefty. But if they believe enough in Rincones to be the right-handed option against, or left-handed option against right-handed pitching. And like, I think Steer's probably a better player than Rincones. But if you look at the splits, and he's on an expiring deal, he's got an OPS over 1,000 against left-handed pitching. And I think he's hitting 313. It feels like you were looking at the stop Tucker.
I have this baseball reference page up right now.
Yeah, so I know he's hitting over 300 against lefties with an OPS over 1,000. So could the new version of Rob Refsnyder be dropping with Spencer Steer? Possibly. We're monitoring that situation. But, you know, I don't know if you can start planning your parade down Broad Street, but a Singer-Steer package deal at the deadline with maybe one of those relievers mixed in there could be an option for this team. And obviously we're kind of watching these teams heading into the trade deadline, trying to assess who could be someone that we could take from them. And Spencer Steer certainly is a guy that over the last couple of years and this series has definitely caught my eye.
Yeah, I mean, against lefties this year, coming into tonight, 333 with a 1078 OPS, which is exactly what you need. I mean, when Derek Hill is kind of your best option against left-handed pitching, especially off the bench, and he offers a lot of defensive versatility, too. He's played both corner outfield positions this year. He's played both corner infield positions. He's played second base as well. So he gives you that kind of versatility where, you know, he might not be a guy who you stick out in right field every day and say you're playing, you know, six games a week. But if he can fill in for Stott and maybe have a bit of a platoon there, if he can take at bats away from Alec Bohm when he's cold and give him a rest, he could fill in at first base. He can fill in both corner outfield spots. I mean, that's kind of the guy I think the Phillies would be more interested in, because outside of right field, and, you know, obviously you're not acquiring a right fielder because you have Rinconis and Hill. That seems like a pretty small speed bump or small obstacle to prevent you from getting a huge upgrade there. But
you think that's a bad idea? You think that's a bad idea? Interesting.
But if you're just looking to add bats and you're trusting Don Mattingly to piece this puzzle together, adding a guy who could, you know, conceivably play five different positions for you on any given night, you know, would be huge. I mean, you see what they do with Sosa, right? Where he's out there in left field, he's playing shortstop, he's playing both second and third. I mean, having another guy who can do that and who also has a bit of pop too. He's got 14 home runs this year, which is something that, you know, outside of Schwarber and Harper, you don't have a lot of pop in your lineup. You don't have a lot of guys who can leave the yard. That's another thing that this team is really missing. And when we talk about guys who kind of profile what they're looking for, whether it's someone like Elliot Ramos, they're usually high OBP guys and not necessarily high power guys. And Spencer Steer is kind of that profile.
Seems like I talked to you into Spencer Steer real quick. Real quick.
You did.
Thank you.
You did talk to me. I also like the name Spencer Steer. That's a good name.
Dude, I know. Sounds like a guy. All right. Harper's in the home run derby mentioned a little bit earlier. Never a doubt there. The showman was never not going to participate in the home run derby. It seems like, and not to get, again, super nerdy, but, and I wish I remembered his first name. He was the guy that pitched to Schwarber last year. But I think he's a Dodgers infield coach or Dodgers position coach, Ebel. And what's funny about him is much like the Lombard brothers. So George Lombard is a Tigers bench coach, and George Lombard Jr. got drafted 2 years ago. And then Jacob Lombard is going to get drafted this year. Ebel, his two sons, are going to get drafted in back-to-back years. So the Phillies conceivably could draft Trey Ebel this year while his dad is throwing home run derby to Bryce Harper. Now he's more like a third round, second round type kid, like good player. He's not like, I think he's like a, oh, he's probably overslot by that point. But it's just funny, the symmetry there.
It's fascinating. You're able to work the draft and the home run derby talk.
Well, the first...
That's why you're the best.
I saw one tweet about how Ebel is probably going to be the guy who's throwing BP to Bryce for the home run derby. I was like, well,
Bryce moved pretty quickly off of, I'll only do it if my dad pitches to me.
I already have the guy? Like,
that was pretty quick.
Seems like we had it all planned out from Jump Street. So I do have some draft stuff, as I'm sure people are waiting with bated breath. But I do have one last point that I want to make sure that we bring up in the pod and just try to get out in front of. He's going to pitch in the Futures game on Sunday. That's great. And we'll see if he's traded at the trade deadline. This is more like post-trade deadline. And I know the inning limit. Gage Wood should be a factor in the bullpen discussion when discussing this team moving forward this year. Like, if you can go out and get a lefty, a real lefty, with Alvarado's struggles. A lot of people bringing up Alvarado's baseball savant to me today. Don't care. Doesn't pass the eye test, unlike Lizardo, where Lizardo's baseball savant page made a lot of sense. So if you can go, instead of having to go and get two bullpen pieces, you go get a lefty, whether it's Minter, Brooks Raley, obviously Chapman's the big name. Like, Gage Wood should be a part of that. I mean, we've seen enough times. It's not going to ruin his development. He'll be fine. He has said that I will pitch out of the bullpen. They need me to pitch out of the bullpen. I just want to be in the big leagues. He is an adrenaline junkie. Like, watching him pitch, he is a psycho on the mound in the most positive way that I can say it. Like, he is, I think he is so geared to being a late inning reliever type. I think he would do so well at the CBP crowd. He needs to be an option out of the bullpen for this team down the stretch run, because first off, I think he could get big league outs today with that fastball, especially if it's one inning, and they just don't have that many great options. They don't, you know, I mean, Bolin developing into a good late inning option. Kirkring, you still have questions about. Duran, great. Keller, we'll see. You add Gage Wood to that mix to go along with a lefty that you trade for at the deadline, and then you slot Alvarado down or whatever. That's how you piecemeal this thing together and get the bullpen turning into hopefully a strength, or at least something that you feel good about heading into October.
Yeah, and you know, like, if you do that, obviously it's not a sure thing, but then you can kind of squint and see you have 3, 4, 5 guys you could trust in high leverage situations to get big outs. And you know, Gage Wood, like, they kind of did it with Kirkering. Obviously, it was a different profile because he was a 5th round pick, and they pretty much only used him as a reliever in the minors. But I mean, he started 23 at Jersey Shore, right, and worked his way up and was in the big leagues by September, and then was, you know, taking down big outs in the NLCS, not successfully because he struggled against the Diamondbacks, but he was there. They put him in those situations. So it would be interesting because let's say they go out of the deadline and maybe they do try to get another right-handed reliever and they strike out. What's their plan B? Because you can't just go back to the team and go back to the fans and say, we tried and we struck out. So unfortunately, you have Kirkering and you have these guys moving forward. Like, I think at that point, maybe the Gage Wood development for this season changes to where let's get him to AAA. Let's put him in the bullpen. Let's see what he can do when he's only trying to throw 15, 20 pitches.
Yeah. I mean, it's also dependent upon if Alex McFarland is traded. If he's not traded, maybe then they fast track that and get him up as quick as possible. Who knows? But I do think the Gage thing, outside of being traded in a package for like a real player, I'm not looking to trade Gage Wood. I don't want to do that at all. But if you have a chance to get some difference-making talent in here that could really help this team win a World Series, I'd explore it. But at least to put him in the bullpen, they can't be so afraid of hurting his development as a starter to hurt the big league club from the standpoint of going and getting a reliever or being a part of the reliever mix if you can't go out and get another shutdown type guy at the trade deadline. So that's where I think Gage could come in. 1 year too late on the "see you out of the bullpen in September" Gage tweet the second that he was drafted. You know, never wrong, just early, Tucker.
Just early, never wrong.
All right, some quick draft stuff before we wrap this this podcast on up. We are getting closer and closer to draft time. Saturday, me and Seltzer will be on the air live from the
All-Star Village.
the All-Star Village down there. So I saw Buzz down there taking
some hats. Buzz and Uram going through all of the little exhibits there?
Yeah, no, I mean, if that's not Dynamite content, I don't know what is. If that's not,
you gave them the password to our Twitter account. That's what I want to know.
I don't know. That seems like a you thing more than anyone else.
Reporter's on vacation, so.
So am I, technically.
With Instacart Shopper Notes, you can get specific about your groceries. Take strawberries. You don't want just any strawberries. You want the ones that took their time, grown slow, the ones that weren't in a rush to get to the store. Bright red, but not showy. Firm, but, you know, polite about it. The kind you'd wash carefully, because, hey, they earned it. Okay, so maybe you can't get that specific with Shopper Notes, but you get the idea. Want to get groceries just how you like? Download the Instacart app.
As the U.S. men's national team takes center stage at a home World Cup, make sure you're listening to Call It What You Want, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can join me, I'm Jimmy Conrad, alongside Charlie Davies, Tony Miola, Marcelo Balboa, and Benny Feilhaber throughout this tournament for previews, instant reactions, and analysis of every U.S. match. Then all summer, we're back every Tuesday and Thursday, covering all things U.S. men's national team. Download and follow Call It What You Want on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right. So I got two things here. One, I didn't mention this in the guys that I love, and this is just doing more research the last 2 days. So I have the guys I love, guys I talk myself into, and guys I'm out on. A guy that I would love, and I hope that they would consider him at 36. I can't tell if he's going to be an underslot guy or no, or a right on, or maybe a little overslot. It's not the same guy, but his name's Luke Williams.
I know.
But he's a PA kid, not local, like out towards Pittsburgh area. So whatever, they produce kind of better athletes anyway. And sort of reminds me of Trey, where he's super twitchy, super fast. But I think he's probably going to end up in center field. I know that Trey is technically playing shortstop, but now Luke Williams, you look at the swing, it's a very easy lift. I think that if he wanted to add pop, I think that he has pop in that bat. So he has been added to the guys I would love for them to take. But I really do think two nights out, I feel better about the chances of them adding a Rocco Maniscalco, Archer Horn, or Tyler Spangler. I think they're going to get one of those guys if I had to handicap it right now, which would mean that they're going to go overslot at that pick because they have $2.8 million on that pick. I think Spangler will be in the $4 million range. I think that Maniscalco will be in the $3 million range, and I think that Archer Horn will be in the $3.5 million range. So that's the super nerdy quick breakdown of the 36 pick, which leads me to, and this would cause a million yawns out of James Seltzer, and maybe I can keep Tucker Bagley awake, and I promise
I'm locked in.
I'll make this as quick as I can, but I have my favorites at 64.
Well, that's where the draft class for me really turns.
It does. So Rugger Rio Rojas, he is a senior at Texas, and being a senior, he's not going to cost as much. You would draft him in the second round if you draft a Spangler, Maniscalco, one of those guys in the first, Archer Horn in the first round. It's where you have to save money on your second round pick. He's 23 already, which is, you don't love the draft, but you want to talk about stuff popping and being just a college performer and pitching on the biggest stage. He was on the biggest stage this year and absolutely shoved. And I think that he is an underslot candidate. I have a lot of overslot candidates. He's an underslot candidate. Same thing with Brett Renfro, a right-handed pitcher from Virginia Tech. Big power stuff, and someone that I think that they would be able to save money on if they take one of those high-level high school prep guys at 36. And then my last underslot guy would be Carson Tinney, who is the catcher at at Texas kind of reminds me of Mike Zunino for a couple years ago, where it's like a 230 average, but has the upside of hitting 30 plus home runs and can stick behind the plate. Now, some quick overslot guys at 64 is Caden McCarthy's a Vermont kid that throws 99.
That's a baseball hotbed.
You never see Vermont. That's why I want him so bad. Like, you never see Vermont, you know, factored in here, but up to 99. It reminds me of Sonny Gray's 6 foot kid. And like, maybe if they go underslot, and he could be available in the third overslot, they could float him down. But I would love Caden McCarthy. He is awesome. Gavin Geis, same thing. You know, similar to Matthew Fisher last year, very polished. You know, has 4 to 5 pitches as a high schooler. I think that he is an overslot candidate at 64. Martin Scheller, same thing. These are, I don't know why I'm saying same thing. They're all overslot guys at this point. Martin Scheller would be if you take like a Will Brick with a 36 pick. You take one of these guys where how the baseball draft works, sorry, is like if you want to take a guy, they have $2.8 million allotted for that spot. The Phillies have like the least amount in the class, them and the Dodgers, the least amount of class. So you have $2.8 million in that slot. Sometimes you take under it and you can sign a guy for like $2 million or $1.5 million. Then you can spread that money out. So the thought process would be, and it's what they did in 2024 when they took Norrie in the first round, then Griffin Burkhold in the second round.
They did it with Moniak.
And they did it with Mickey Moniak. And man, what was that guy's name? It was
they gave him the
Kevin Gowdy
bonus.
Yeah, Kevin Gowdy. Yeah, well, listen, he didn't work out. He kind of had showed signs of life in Clearwater in 2021, but it was not for, it didn't last very long. So, yes, they did it with Moniak and Kevin Gowdy. They did it with Norrie and Griffin Burkholder. And, you know, Norrie has been hurt, which is unfortunate because, you know, it kind of robs you of what you think he's been this year. And Burkholder's been pretty good. So the thought process is you take two for the price of one, basically. You like one of the high school kids, but you sign him under slot because he gets to be a first round pick. It's $2.8 million. You sign him for a pretty good bonus, but then you can spread that money out. I think they're going to do that, but we will see when the draft rolls around. So these guys in the second round are guys that you're paying probably over slot for because the slot in 64 is like $1 million or $1.2 million, and you'd probably have to go over that to sign one of these guys. Quick synopsis of the overslot underslot process. So Martin Scheller is a really tooled up outfielder that, because he is going to be a corner outfielder, teams don't want to draft him super high because everyone wants a up the middle guy, shortstop or center fielder. He is not that, but he's a real power weapon, a power upside from the right side. Same thing with Blake Bowen. I don't think he'll be there at 64. I think he will go before that, so it's not worth talking about. James Tronstein is a infielder from Harvard Westlake, which is a great baseball program in California. He is committed to Vanderbilt. He's got a funky little swing, but put up really, really big exit velocity numbers out in the combine. I think he could be a very, very solid pick at 64. Alex Weingarter is a Penn State commit, so get excited, Penn State fans. I don't know if he's going to be there, but he is really, really he's tooled up, and like that you've seen real swing adjustments from him in the last 6 months. Andrew Giles is a Nevada kid, Las Vegas kid. He is a candidate, I think, at 64. It's awesome because he spells his name just like Andrew Jones. With the U, and his last name's Giles, so I just think it's a Brian Giles, Andrew Giles, you know, like the same guy. But a sweet swinging lefty that plays in the outfield and is certainly interesting. And then last name I do want to talk about, because I think he's going to be a fill, whether it's in the second round or third round, is a guy named Ryan Peterson, who has a like Brian Wu type fastball. And is really starting to fly up draft boards. If I had to bet on one guy being a Philly on Saturday, I think it's Ryan Peterson. I think that guy's a stud, and it's exactly what the Phillies look for in pitching. And he'll cost like $500,000 in slots that are over $1 million or in the $800,000 range. So they can save money. he's got a curveball that's in the 3,000 RPMs with a really, really good fastball. So Ryan Peterson is a name, whether it's second or third round, that I do want to make sure is on the record, because I can just feel it in my bones. Not that anyone cares, but people on this podcast sometimes care. All right, Tucker. Well, it's been a fun week. You know,
it has been a fun week.
We have done 35 plus minutes. We are at 47 minutes on this.
We're at 47 minutes today,
which is pretty surprising. I mean, now the first 2 minutes of this podcast, we were talking about Jim Croce,
that probably won't make it on the final cut.
Who I do force all of my people that I think have good music taste to go through one Jim Croce phase, as he is a phenomenal voice of Philadelphia that is going to be forgotten at some point, because he died in like 1973. But yes, he did die in a plane crash.
Most famous musician to die in a plane crash?
Jim Croce. Everyone says that. But he is a GOAT, and I do hope people check him out. And I don't know if we're doing I don't think this is going to be on video tonight.
Probably not.
I did move my setup to right in front of the boys' jungle gym down here. And Tucker,
how the slide goes right into a support pole. That seems dangerous.
Yeah, so I thought the same thing. And it could be. But there's been no injuries yet, and we're breeding toughness in this house. So, you know, like, they'll be okay. It's not like that drastic of a slide. They will make it. And Tucker was very kind to point out that, yes, my ceiling down here does look horrible.
Just need some new drop ceiling tiles. You'll be all right.
Yeah, but again, it's the basement.
Who's going to see it?
Who's going to see it? Who cares? Who cares? This isn't the man cave yet. But, Tucker, do you have any final thoughts before getting out of here?
Don Mattingly might or may not have leaked that Kyle Schwarber is going to be in the Home Run Derby.
Yeah, so I saw the one tweet about that, but I couldn't listen to it, obviously, because we're...
He was asked what he thought about Bryce doing it, and he said it's really cool that Bryce and Kyle get to do it in the home stadium.
Yeah. Don Mattingly does not care. Don Mattingly...
No. He was offered a chance to take it back. They said, well, Kyle hasn't said he's doing it yet. And he's like, oh, I was told him and Bryce are definitely doing it.
Nice. Dude, since he has taken over as manager... His level of, you know, giving a bleep has really gone down. And we've been monitoring this podcast, and I appreciate it. Like, just come out and tell the truth. We know.
That's what you get when you hire a Hall of Famer as a manager. Should be Hall of Famer.
You know Schwarber's going to be in the Home Run Derby. We don't need to beat around the bush. We all understand. And he should be. He should be. It's at CBP. And he's going against Harper, beat him in 2018. So it'd be funny if they squared off again. Well, that's going to do it for the pod. Appreciate everyone checking it out this week. Again, Seltzer and I back on the air on Saturday and Sunday. So that'll be fun. I'm sure we'll have some draft reaction on Monday. Who knows? But Tucker, thanks so much for stepping in.
Thank
much
you.
Appreciated. And we will talk to you soon here on the High Hopes Podcast.
Looking for a simpler way to explore medical weight loss options? Orderly Meds connects you online with licensed healthcare providers so you can learn about GLP-1 treatment options from home. It's convenient, straightforward, and designed to fit your lifestyle. Get started today at orderlymeds.com/podcasts. That's orderlymeds.com/podcasts. Again, orderlymeds.com/podcasts. Compounded medications are not FDA approved. Results may vary. Consult a licensed healthcare provider to determine if treatment is appropriate for you. Restrictions apply.